All right, our next speaker is Nigel Ellis. Nigel has been with Microsoft since, I think, 1993, I guess, and has been in the data component of Microsoft all that time in the SQL Server team. And it's an area that has undergone extraordinary innovation just in the last few years. So I'm excited to see what Nigel has to say. So please welcome Nigel Ellis.
Good to be here. It's a pretty lively panel discussion that I heard earlier. So I'm going to spend maybe about 45 minutes, certainly no more than an hour. I know I'm between you and lunch, so I don't want to rob or derive you of sustenance and food. But I'm going to spend a little time talking about the work that we've been doing in Azure about what we're calling data insights and some of the problems and some of the customer wins and experiences we've had there, and effectively what the Azure platform has to offer for you. There's an interesting chart here. If you think about, just think about your own business or the world at large and so on, there's a mass explosion of data sources out there right now. So think about mobile devices, sensor data, embedded devices, and so on. So the prediction here from the survey work we did that by 2020, there'll be 25 billion sources of net new data. Right? So what does that do? More data, explosion. And we actually project there's going to be a 41% aggregate growth rate year over year through that period. That's phenomenal. Right? But what are people doing with this data? They want to derive value from it. Right? So if you think about a taxonomy of data, you build models, you get information, and then from information you can derive knowledge. There's actually a virtuous cycle there. The more insights you can derive ultimately from your data, it creates other questions, things that you want to go and answer and so on. So that creates more data sources coming online, and this is a virtuous cycle. Right? So we basically did a bunch of survey work with Gartner, and the projection we have is that companies that actually embrace this virtuous data cycle and so on have the opportunity to derive $1.6 trillion worth of new information insights and so on. That's a huge amount of money, right? And it's actually a very, very easy pattern to think about. Right? So I'm going to basically walk through right now what we have. So we think about our information platform as sort of three basic layers of a cake. You need to capture and manage information. And you think about information in terms of volume, velocity, and variety, right? So volume, what kind of scales, how much data corpuses do you actually have? Velocity, what are the speeds and feeds of that data is coming in? Some of that data will be trickling in very, very slowly. Other data feeds will be coming in much more at a real-time basis and so on. And then lastly, variety. Data in different shapes and sizes, right? So think of blob data. All the way to boring, flat, rectangular tables, hierarchical data, document formats, and so on. And what we've been doing at Microsoft and bringing that value to Azure is to basically give you best-of-breed capabilities for data in different shapes, different forms, different volumes, and so on. So what you see here in this three-layer cake, so the lower layer, what capabilities do we have to capture and manage your data? Obviously, there's relational stores, non-relational stores, and so on. Once you've captured it, you want to apply models over the top of it. So that requires you to go transform it, creating information models, multidimensional models, and so on, doing analysis. And at the end of the day, creating information serves no purpose unless people are going to make decisions around that, right? That's where rich visualizations and decision makers come in and so on. So we actually see these opportunities coming to many different vertical market segments and so on. All the way from sales tracking to performance analysis. For those of you who are football fans, be watching the Super Bowl, you may have seen Microsoft Surface tablets on the sidelines, right? The NFL is actually using that to provide real-time gameplay information to the players and coaches, right? They're moving from a model where previously they would print out things, they'd rush from the locker room and so on. They now have the opportunity to have that information at their fingertips and so on. Now, my day job is actually running Azure SQL Database. So that's our platform as a service managed database service in the cloud. And one of the dirty secrets, if you will, is I've been running and working in SQL Server for almost 20 years. Been building a product, telling customers how to go use it. But up until about 5 years ago, I never ran a SQL Server installation myself, right? The audience would know way more about running SQL Server and the realities and challenges of that than I ever would. But 5 years ago, we kicked off essentially this path towards a cloud service. And that cloud service that we run right now is growing like hotcakes, very, very good business for us and so on. But what's super interesting to me is I have an amazing opportunity to observe what people are doing, right? I can observe database workloads. That allows us to take essentially the signals or the feeds that we actually have and do things like provide upscaling advisors. Hey, you're running out of capacity. We could move you to the next resource tier automatically. You no longer need to pay for over-provisioning. We could move you down. We could give you index recommendations and so on. The other thing we did is with SQL Server, you get these nasty things called errors, right? You can have user-facing errors, syntax error, missing column name, incorrect command, and so on. There's also errors that my development team introduce, right, through bad code being deployed and so on. So imagine you have a service hosting millions of databases in the cloud. We wanted to tap into the error stream coming out of all databases in all geo-regions around the world and ask questions. Is the build that we just pushed any good? Did it introduce problems and so on? But there's an incredible amount of noise out there because of the natural user workloads that are running. You're doing your development, you're running scripts, you might have syntax errors there. So how do we separate those things out, remove the noise, so we get actually a very, very good signal? And the work that we did there has actually enabled us to move from what we were previously driving, a 3.9s availability SLA, all the way up to 4.9s, because we have a much tighter bound and insight around our quality. So what are some of the examples of what customers are actually doing with Azure today? This is a great example. So MYOB is a software as a service company. They're based out of Australia. They provide hosting solutions for small businesses. So think corner stores, shops, retail locations, and so on. They have approximately 1.2 million customer sites deployed, right? Mostly focused on the Australia region. And they really wanted to revolutionize their business. They said, we want to sort of reimagine our solution that we have today, which was previously running on bare metal hardware on-prem. They want to go to new markets, and they want to be able to offer differentiated performance guarantees to the various customers. So we actually worked with them, and they completely redesigned their application, and they moved it to Azure, using Azure SQL Database to host their data tier. And they were able to actually achieve new scale, better availability. They have geo-redundancy. So for those of you who attended Scott's keynote yesterday, Sean Bice gave a demo on ActiveDR with Azure SQL Database, where you can actually have geo-redundant secondary copies and so on. And MYOB is using those capabilities to achieve their GOHA. And then they also achieve scale, right? Anywhere from low tens to thousands of actual database instances, right? So one of the things that they've actually enjoyed is the ability to go dynamically provision on demand. There's some very interesting dev test scenarios here. Hey, I need to essentially do a scale test. Imagine 10,000 customers just showed up at the same point in time. How do I do that? I can just provision for the period that I need to actually drive that scenario, and then deprovision. I'm only paying for the resources that I actually consume. So the whole capture managed tier is really about providing rich data stores and so on. So as I've mentioned, Azure DB, we provide HA, Elastic Scale Performance, and so on. One of the demos I want to quickly jump to here is a pseudo-fictitious ticket system. So for those of you who've used Ticketmaster to buy concert tickets and so on, obviously there's many, many concerts and venues that you might go to that are oversubscribed. The tickets go on sale. Essentially, they're sold out in low tens of minutes, sometimes a few minutes, and so on, right? So you think about the type of different concerts and events that you might want to be hosting as a ticket seller. Some concerts are less interesting and exciting, so they might actually just trickle. Ticket sales may trickle. Other ones may be sold out in a few hours and so on. So what happens if you suddenly have a concert with essentially the interest in that concert actually upticks? At that point, you want to make sure you have the ability to go dynamically provision resources behind that, right? So this is a pretty standard site. I can go look. I can find a specific concert. I can go find seats. I can browse the ticket map and so on. I can, of course, purchase tickets. I need to sign in to do that. Once I've done that, I can go purchase my tickets, because it's a little bit mocked up right now. I go submit my transaction and so on. But of course, behind all this, we have state, right? And that state in this example stored in Azure DB. This state, of course, is critical, financial transactions and so on. So what's really going on behind the covers here? So I'm jumping into the Azure portal right now, and I have this database here called Concert Tickets 3. And you can see here, based on the resource utilization that I have, that that database has actually been essentially pushed to its maximum throughput. So in Azure DB, we have this concept that we call the DTU, Database Throughput Unit. And that is essentially a proxy for a bounding box of resources, memory, CPU, I/O. And we also offer the ability to support different pricing tiers. So for example, I've just gone and clicked through now, and these are all the different database offers that are available to me as a tenant of Azure DB. And right now, the database I was using, it was using basic. It only had 5 DTUs. And if I wanted to achieve more throughput, I could move it to one of our other offers. So for example, if I was to pick the S1 standard offer, that gives me 4 times more throughput than I currently have with the basic, right? Click select, I'm done. And now if we go back and look here, we can actually see if that change has actually gone through yet. And there we see here the current SLO target, the current tier that I'm hosting is actually S1. You can see while I've been playing around with my demo, I've been flipping it back and forth between S1 basic, S1 basic, and so on. And if I now go run my load generator again, we'll leave that to cook in the background a little bit, and then perhaps later in the talk we can check back and see how that's actually doing. Okay. Different clicker, maybe? There we go. All right, okay, so what did we show there? We showed scalable performance, right? So Azure DB provides you different service tiers, as we call them. Service tiers offer different capabilities, so basic tier, standard tier, premium tier. Within each tier, we also offer different SLO levels. So there's a standard 0, standard 1, standard 2. And the idea is you would pick the service tier that was most appropriate for the feature set that you needed. So for example, if you wanted the ability to do active geo-redundancy, the demo that was in the keynote yesterday, that's a premium feature. If you could live with passive geo-DR, that is that where we pick the secondary geo-region for you, and in the event of a problem, you could fail over to that region, that's a standard tier. If on the other hand, you're willing to just essentially do a geo-restore operation in the event of a disaster, that's available in basic for you, right? And the difference between all of these capabilities is really how quickly could you fail over in the event of, say, a geo disaster, right? So in the slide at the bottom here, really all we're illustrating is the fact that there's a different SLO that we can actually drive. And as and when you need more resources available, you can upsize. And it's easy as going to the portal through a graphical UI. Of course, if we're really managing big systems and so on, we're not going to be using web browsers and portals and so on. We have full rich APIs, web service APIs, PowerShell commandlets, and so on. The key thing here is that, like with any cloud scale application, people will tell you failures are more commonplace, right? So there's a question here of using resiliency patterns in the event that my connection drops. I want to retry, right? So as long as you've encoded those various patterns, whether it be at your data tier, or through your various web service protocols and so on, while these SLO change operations are actually in flight, your workload will continue on a near instant online capability, right? So how do we do it under the covers a little bit, right? I was told this is sort of an architect forum, so I couldn't resist throwing in a few sort of detailed slides here. So under the covers, Azure DB is built from the SQL Server core IP. And what we've been doing over the last 5-6 years is we have a common code line from which we build SQL Server, our classic box product, whether you run it virtualized or bare metal. We also build something called APS. That's our on-premise DW appliance. You buy hardware and software together. And then, of course, we have Azure SQL Database. It's all common IP. So as and when we create a new capability, we can light it up in those three different delivery vehicles and so on. And what we do in Azure DB, built on the Azure platform, by the way, so we're an Azure Compute tenant, is we model the topology of a cluster. Clusters have different failure units associated with them. I put machines in racks. Racks have power. Racks also have networking on the top of them. Those are discrete units of failure. If I lose the top of rack switch, potentially all the machines within that rack are unavailable. So if I want to achieve high availability, what do? I create multiple database copies, and then I make sure those databases are distributed across those fault domains. And what we do in Azure DB to achieve the four nines SLA and the high availability is we create three or four copies for you. And then as transactions are committed to the primary copy, we ensure that a majority of all copies acknowledge that transaction, right? So that's a majority quorum. So if you've got four copies available, you need three copies to acknowledge that the transaction's been safely committed, right? You could have a laggard that would eventually catch up. If it's a laggard that's running slow endlessly for some reason, we'll actually observe that, and we may actually reseed another copy and then drop that copy from that machine. Perhaps it's under excessive load for some reason. This is the active GDPR scenario that was in the keynote yesterday. This is a really killer feature. And I think the demo hopefully resonated with a lot of people. Right? How many of you have high availability and geo scenarios that you have to meet for your business? Right? Pretty much everybody, right? And it's actually growing, right? As we move more to being much more of a global business and so on, this is very, very critical. We now have the ability in Azure DB to essentially create geo copies anywhere around the world where we have Azure data centers, right? And those are growing. So this is actually a really great feature. You, of course, control when you fail over, when you would want to go fail back. And then we also have passive GDPR capabilities in standard and active restore in basic. So moving up sort of the layer cake a little bit, so transform and analyze. Once we've got these great stores, and we've captured and we've put information inside of them, what can we go do with it, right? And a really, really common scenario that we see right now is the notion of streaming analytics, right? So you think of sensor data coming in. You know, whether it's near real time or it's more of a trickle latency, you know, that's the velocity aspect, but it's more of a streaming sense of data, and you want to do processing over the top of it. And one of the capabilities we have is a service called Azure Stream Analytics. And that enables you to attach to different data sources, different feeds, if you will, and perform standing queries over that and make business decisions over it. So let's talk briefly about an example of a customer that's done that. So Aerocrine specializes in asthma care devices. And they're essentially a geo company. And they sell these devices, which are like puff inhaling machines. You blow into them. And essentially, the machine will determine how much medication to push out to the patient. One of the problems with these machines, like all new fandangled technology, they're a little finicky and they break. And in particular, when they start to break, they become overly sensitive to ambient air temperature and humidity and so on. And what Aerocrine found is that when they break, it takes them 2 or 3 days to get a new device to their patients. And if you're a chronic asthma sufferer, Aerocrine, if it's going to be out for 2 or 3 days, is a shitty solution for you, right? So what they wanted to do is say, hey, how can we leverage active monitoring of these devices? Because there's actually a patent that says they can detect when the machine is starting to fail. Then they can actively reach out, ship a new device to the patient, and then RMA the old device on the customer behalf and so on, right? So it's actually a very interesting case study that we looked at. And what they did is they used core capabilities that we have in Azure. We have the devices flowing in from the left here. So those are all the asthma devices. They're streaming data up into the cloud. We're ingesting that data with a service called Event Hub. And if you've ever tried to build a data capture service and an ingesting service that scales across many, many data sources and so on, it's difficult, right? Event Hub is essentially a tool that's targeted exactly at that scenario. Once data is in Event Hub, there's a PubSub model that moves into a service that we have called Stream Insight. And Stream Insight lets you build essentially standing queries using a SQL-like language, uses these things called tumbling window aggregates, right? Which is constantly taking an interval and rerunning the standing query over and over and over again. And what Aerocrine did is they used that to do the analysis of failure prediction. Once essentially the standing queries do their work, that pumps data into a relational database, and then they have Power BI reporting on the back end, right? And what's been very interesting in sort of this information composition pattern here is they used and composed the data here with the data that they actually had in the ERP system, so Microsoft Nav Dynamics and so on. And that allowed their sales force to do interesting things, to look where the devices were being deployed. They had customer telemetry. They knew where the sensor data was actually coming from. They could understand on a geo basis where these devices were being used around the world and composing that information together. So streaming analytics is actually a pretty great service. We're pretty excited about it. It allows you to intake millions of events per second, right? And these devices, you know, you might have a small number of data feeds, or they could number into the millions of devices as these sort of little devices take off. I don't know how many of you are sort of in a fitness craze, but I wear this little Fitbit tracker, right? Everybody has watches now. It's all over the globe. That's the Internet of Things, right? That's what I was talking about, the explosion of data sources. Each of those is a data source. If you're like me, you get excited to see how many steps you did and how your weight's doing on your Wi-Fi tracker and all of those things, right? That's a great example of how this thing's actually taking off. And services like Stream Analytics are actually going to help us a lot with that path. There's the ability to deal with variable loads. So it's one thing to say, I now connect all the spigots and I can start processing it. But what happens if my volume takes off, right? Either in terms of the velocity or volume of data coming in, or the number of data sources that are actually enlisted, right? So the ability, similarly in the way that I scaled up the database in the Azure DB example, the ability to go scale my data flow and workload pipeline and so on. So one of the things that I briefly mentioned here was the use of SQL, right? So it's actually very interesting. So for those out there who have done sort of analytics, have any of you used R? Yeah, quite a few of you in the audience. It's actually a very, very popular data analytics package. It's actually very, very powerful. You have to write programs. You have to write procedural code and so on. And what we illustrate here is we took essentially about 2,000 lines of code to do streaming window aggregates, and we converted it into 3 lines of SQL dialect, right? So the magic clause on that bottom is group by tumbling window, 5, minute. And what that does is rather than a classic aggregate that it takes a static snapshot, it says using the temporal arrival time of the event, bucketize it into 5-minute windows for me, right? So this query will never terminate. It'll always run. And as long as you have events coming in, it will always exhaust at least one row every 5 minutes, right? So if you think about the power to do that, for many of us who go splunking in data, the programs that you write, they're essentially never static. They're always changing in this discovery, because as you build more insights, you discover more questions you want to ask, so you have to refine them, right? So the ability to take essentially something common and fairly ubiquitous like SQL and bring that to this new problem domain is something that's actually very, very powerful for us. The last part of the data stack is really around visualizing and making decisions, right? So this is actually an interesting part for us, because for those of you who use SharePoint today, anybody use SharePoint? And do you use Excel and Power BI on premise? Anybody? Few people, yeah. So we brought Power BI to O365. Right, so if you're an O365 tenant up in the cloud, you have all the benefits that you have with Power BI on-prem. We're effectively hosting the same infrastructure for you and so on. And the notion of dashboarding taking off, the ability to say, once I've built those data and information models, I can actually visualize and make rich decisions. That's where essentially this data dividend really starts to be paid off, right? So a whole part of this ecosystem chain that I'm talking about here, one interesting aspect is how the heck do you discover these data sources, right? I'm sure all of you, you know, in small, medium, large enterprise and so on, there's a lot of rich data available out there. And you're willing to share it with people, but one of the biggest problems you have is how the hell do I discover it, right? So that's one of the things that we've been looking at here in providing information catalogs and so on. And through Power BI, the ability to go publish data sources. So as any self-service Power BI tenant actually comes on board, they can browse the enterprise catalog of data sources, enroll in them, start using them immediately, and so on. So one of the things that we announced yesterday that was actually pretty exciting for us is a new PowerBI.com. So one of the challenges that we've heard from many customers is, I'm not on Office 365. I love your BI tools, but I can't use them, right? I'm not ready to adopt, or I can't adopt Office 365. How can I actually have the value that's locked up in the BI tool chain and so on available to me? So yesterday we announced PowerBI.com, and PowerBI.com is effectively the same value prop where we have with that BI tool chain and so on, available to you as a non-O365 tenant, right? And there'll be obviously some interesting integration work we can do there. For example, you might onboard to PowerBI.com. Later on, you might actually want to move that those Power BI tools, workbooks, and so on into O365 and vice versa. So there's a lot of work that the Power BI team's actually doing to go drive that change and so on. So I'd really encourage you to go play with that. No credit card sign up. You can be up and running in minutes. There's some really, really nice samples there and so on. So last slide really is, you know, if you think about the various value props we have through that layer cake, we have essentially this volume, velocity, and variety data, right? And the thing that's been really a great learning experience for me in running Azure DB is I have a data problem, right? How on earth do I support that service? How on earth do I build insights? And at the end of the day, how do I take that data dividend, if I will, and offer it back to my customers in terms of workload advisors, in terms of essentially index tuning advisors. How do I ensure I'm driving better quality and product in what I'm pushing to the cloud, right? So I'm living this sort of virtuous cycle right now, and I'm sure many of you are also experiencing the same thing yourself. So let's briefly just check back, see how our demo did. There we go. So we purchased 25,000 tickets again. And we can see here, this thing work? What time is it now? It's noon. Yeah, we're lagging a little bit. But you can see here at the peak, we had 100% utilization. And then once our SLO change went through and we resubmitted, it dropped down to near 70% and so on. Of course, what I'm not capturing here is the latency of each transaction. Obviously, if I'm pushing something at 100%, each individual transaction would maybe queued, might have latency behind it, and so on. So what you would see, if I had a better visualization for you today, if I was tracking the latency, as I increased 4x throughput from my basic to my S1, you would actually see the transaction latency actually reduce for a scenario that was at 100% load. So if you look at broadly of all the things that we've actually been doing, if we can jump back, there was a pretty fast animation there. These are all of the value that we've been driving from the data pillar teams and so on over the last calendar year. It's huge, right? My team made a huge shift about 2+ years ago. We moved about 80% of the engineering resources from classic SQL Server, and we pivoted heavily towards the cloud. We had to go do that because there was a big lack of operational maturity in how we build, scale, run a cloud service, and so on. Now we're at a point where we've pulled a bunch of those resources back, and we're at about a 50-50. So we have 50% of the team focused purely on Azure SQL Database, and the other 50% of the team focused on classic SQL Server, hybrid, and the APS appliance. And then through the work that we're doing around this notion of common mainline, we're driving a lot of cloud-first delivery. So features that will be coming in the next version of SQL Server and APS will ship into Azure SQL Database first. Right? And that's a very common pattern that you'll see across a bunch of the Microsoft teams, where you have a capability that has sort of an on-premise Avenue or LightUp component, and also a cloud-based component, leveraging the cloud to help us build better products, better insight, and faster delivery for our customers, and so on.